we crack on and you might have to shoot us.
Season 5, episode 47.
Oh, we got it right.
I know you did just tell me, but anyway, I'll take that. season 5, episode 47, and we've got two brand new guests who are here tonight. Aren't they, Nath?
They are here.
Look me in the eye. Anyway.
We know who isn't here, though, Nath. Your guy. Your guy's not here.
And they're two very different guests tonight. We've got Liam from Komodo Workwear.
How you doing?
And we've also got Georgina, JCB Digger Girl.
Hello.
So diggers and workwear. So who do you reckon we should get into first?
Well, there's one obvious obvious person we've got to get in first, because he might not be around at the end of the podcast at this rate.
Well, just give a bit of backstory. Liam came all the way from
Essex.
Yeah.
So you can tell the story, Liam. So
all the way from
Essex. So what is it, 200 mile? Is it?
Oh, I don't want to put an exaggeration on it. It took me about 2.5 hours.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So you've got 5 minutes away.
Yeah. 5 minutes from here, yeah. Redditch.
And trickled along, broken down. Never broke down in the motor before.
What car is it?
It's a...
Please say it's electric and it's broke down.
It's a diesel Mercedes Citan black van, which has let me down tonight.
Unlucky Mark.
Yeah.
Unlucky,
bloody
not electric.
Combustible engines. So you're five minutes away. We had to send Jack out to pick you up.
Jack the hero come and collected me.
Yeah, not all heroes wear capes.
That's it.
Just big beards
and Mohicans. So if you've got to shoot off, so we were genuinely just had a call from, was it the RAC?
Yeah,
the
RAC, yeah.
So you might have to
shoot.
Yeah,
I might actually have to slip off, but hopefully I can come back or hopefully you can come a bit later.
So we're obviously recording this in November, but Happy New Year, everybody, because Nathan's now just told us, because he's not going out until New Year.
We just need a little... Party popper. Great, Nath.
Anyway, quick, we've got to get back to you, right? Take us back, give us the brief backstory and tell us how you came to be doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, of course. So I'm from Essex. I come from a hard-working family. My old man's a black cab driver. My mum's a personal assistant. I see firsthand what planning and hard work can get you out of this life, and that's always given me a bit of drive. My old man sort of pushed me into the electric side of things. I worked at a bank, you know, everyone does sort of work experience. Worked in a bank, it weren't really for me, so wanted to go on the tools. I was always quite good with my hands, so my old man reached out to one of his friends, and I was very lucky that they took me on as an apprentice electrician. I went through the years on the tools, and one day I was this is way after my time as well. So I finished out, got my gold card, and I was just working on price. I remember it very clearly. I was sat on the central line, and I was wearing two pairs of trousers. I was wearing tracksuit bottoms on underneath a pair of work trousers. So some days I would just wear the tracksuit bottoms, and I couldn't work as fast because I didn't have all of the essential pockets. Obviously, when you're on price, you like to work as fast as you can, get as much money for your time as possible. And then the days I would use my trousers, I would get all the work done, but I weren't comfortable. So I was flooded with people around me on the central line, and I just thought to myself, I had a little light bulb moment that I was going to make comfortable workwear.
I thought you were going to say, I stood up. Went to get off the tube and my trousers split. I thought that was the moment.
I've had many trousers split as well. Yeah. But yeah.
I mean, just so one thing actually, obviously, because you've moved into the workwear now. Mm. Which brand of workwear were you wearing personally?
No comment. You can no comment that, Liam.
Yeah,
if you
so to be honest, I wasn't actually a massive fan of workwear trousers. I actually was wearing H&M cargos.
Yeah.
So they just had all of the essential pockets. Mm. So I weren't actually wearing a brand. I would have actually mentioned them, but no, I was just wearing H&M normal cargos. They had all of the pockets that I needed. I weren't really working on my knees, so I didn't need knee pad pockets. But obviously, when I started the business, that's obviously an essential for workwear trousers. That was it, really.
Why was it a thing where people wear two pairs of trousers? When you said that, instantly in my head, I went, I've seen loads of people over the years wearing two pairs of trousers. Why?
I feel like it's just comfortable. Obviously, that underneath layer of tracksuit bottoms gives a nice, comfortable.
I'd be so hot.
Yeah.
I sweat at the best of times about two pairs of trousers.
Yeah, to be fair, the building site that I was on at the time, it was one of those shells where it's just no walls and the wind's just gushing through.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've always sort of. I've never always worn two pairs of trousers, if that makes sense. It's just that so I happened to be on that site. That's what I decided to do. And on the central, like, when I was wearing two, I probably had the thought that you just had a minute ago. Yeah. Like, why am I wearing two pairs of trousers?
Yeah. Yeah. So how old are you at this point where you have the epiphany moment and you think?
So I was about 24 or 25. So I'm 28 now. So it was about three and a half years ago. That was when I first come up with the idea. It took me about a year to get the, you know, first products out onto the market.
And where did the name come from?
So when I went travelling, I travelled with two Italian guys for a small period of time and picked up on a few words. And Commodore means comfortable in Spanish and Italian.
Oh, nice.
And that's the concept behind the brand. So we want to make comfortable workwear, but also stylish. You know, I feel like too many brands in the workwear industry focus too much on different things, and I just wanted to bring a little bit of a young sort of.
Some of it is very geography teacher, isn't it?
Mr. Fitzgerald over here.
Yeah, workwear. I find it. I think that it's like that sometimes because they want it to last.
Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas actually, they don't think about the movement in it, or
they like karate trousers
or the look. Yeah. If you know what I mean? Like, especially with social media now, I feel like people want to look.
Yeah.
You know, fashionable as well as be comfortable. I think you're struck on there.
So everyone wants to like look the part. I feel like with the youngsters coming through today, it doesn't matter where they go. Every time you leave your house, you're representing yourself. So you want to make sure you're looking clean and you look presentable, you feel presentable, and you do a better job, I feel like.
Mm. Yeah, it's that self-awareness, isn't it? If you see it all the time, especially plasterers just covered head to toe in crap, and you just think they ain't bothered. Whereas me going into people's houses and electricians and chippies who are in and out of people's houses a lot, you want to look smart.
Do you know what I want to do? I want to send you for a day's worth of plastering and see if you can come home without looking like you've been splattered.
I'll be splattered within the first 5 minutes. I can't even get it. I've had a go. I can't even get the plaster off the hawk onto the trowel.
That's a question then. Which do you think is the dirtiest trade?
Oh.
Which one gets the dirt?
It's not with that. Oh, which one makes the most mess? Electricians. Leave a trail of destruction.
That's only because
they
don't tidy
up. I think depends what
painters or plasterers or.
I think painters has got to be like in terms of painters and plasterers definitely up there for the two dirtiest. But obviously, people like to think that electricians don't get dirty. But if you're pulling in a cable. You know, a big armoured cable through a muddy field or something.
Are you representing for the Sparks here?
Yeah, obviously.
I don't think Bundy or I ever dragged a cable through a field.
Bundy's like that.
Yeah, to be fair, obviously, Bundy's more of a domestic spark, so I don't know if he gets as dirty. But
barely a spark nowadays.
Ad gets dirty. Nick doesn't.
Yeah, I think, I'd have to go with a plasterer. No one likes to have a dollop of plaster on their face or whatever.
Is it dirty work that you do when you're on the diggers
as well?
You just have to turn the aircon up a little bit, turn the radio up.
I don't know. I suppose you get out and about quite a bit. It depends what work you're on. You know, you can just be sat in a machine.
Yeah.
I know some people get really precious about it. They've got little carpets in the cab. They've got slippers. Yeah. And
slippers.
They'll get in the cab, take the boots off, pop the slippers on. And they'll just
That's perfect
there,
croc territory, isn't it?
I'm going to now expect, you know, like two JCBs on her feet.
Sorry. What's that? Dropping things.
That was your sticker. That was your sticker.
That was his car.
I thought it was mine, but it was yours. Do you want me to get it for you?
No, you're right. I'll leave it.
All right.
Like two JCB, you know, the slip-on slippers.
Yeah, they don't make them. Yeah, I'll have to have a word for them on that. Yeah, I could do a pair of them. Okay. Now, to be fair, I'm out about doing stuff. I'm more often than not, I'm showing somebody else how to use the machine or something like that. So, I'm not so much working.
So you mainly, forgive my ignorance, in a cab or out on an open bumper?
A bit of both, really. At the minute, I'm more of like the role is like a demonstrator. So I'm like showing people what it does, what it can do.
I love that.
And
brand new machines?
Like teaching. I suppose, I'm a bit of like doing training and that sort of thing as well. So
Love that.
So not site workers. Yeah. Then now.
But I did spend a bit of time before, like on doing endurance testing, and that was literally just 24 hours a day, sat in the machine. Mm. You know, they've got shifts there that are running the new machines, the new products, and
so just
running
literally
endurance
just
on them.
Quality controlling.
Yeah, just try and break them. It was ace.
Is that is that what they say? Just do whatever.
Yeah,
you want.
You're not trying to break them, obviously, but yeah, just repeat repetitive exercise. Dig a hole, fill it in. Go again,
yeah.
And you do that on all different machines.
Yeah, I think when you launch a new product, especially from,
yeah,
you know, you'll know this is like you say, you think you've mastered it, and then you put it out into the wild, and then all of a sudden there's like a big problem.
Yeah. You got to run the hours on it to test it out, and I suppose you're the same. Like you're living and breathing your brand.
Yeah,
because it works for you, and obviously you know.
Yeah, there's definitely times that you think, yeah, I've cracked it, you know what I mean? But you ain't, or even sometimes you feel like, nah, this is the one, do you know what I mean? Like, there's no more development that I could do to make this better. Mm. And then there is always room for improvement.
And then there's tradesmen and women that just batter everything.
Yeah.
Oh, so what's your Halo product then?
So most of our trousers I'd say that we're releasing some new trousers, so hopefully at this point that you're watching in January 24th.
4th of Jan, wasn't it? 4th of Jan.
Then there should be some new products
just
coming soon. But yeah, we've got sort of like, mainly our trousers is our Halo product, yeah, because we've got a split material. So as I say, Commodore in Spanish and Italian means comfortable. So that's sort of the concept behind it. We've got the elasticated waist with the drawstring, so it sort of makes, you know, if you've had a few beers over the weekend, you're a bit heavier or whatever.
Especially like the new year I just had.
We're good, everybody. We're good.
Yeah, so we've got like twin sets as well. So obviously our younger demographic like to look good and wear tracksuits all the time. So we sort of try to make all of our products in sort of like a twin set or like a matching set. So people have like a complete uniform, so to speak, rather than just sort of, you know,
So say you've got a pair of trousers coming out. Will you 4 or 5 months prior just give them to people to use to try and
field
test them?
So I'm very lucky. Most of my best mates are in the trade.
So they just have them all?
Yeah, so they're, you know, I literally uploaded a photo the other day. My friend Charlie, he's got loads of new samples. I'm just frying
them. Is that the guy sat in the...
Yeah, sat in the chair. Yeah. I said to him, don't you look happy about it as well. they're brilliant.
But
like,
will they
powers.
Give you feedback going, look, Liam, this pit's crap, this don't work?
Yeah, for sure. Like, one of my friends, Harvey, he's a plumber. He really puts them through their paces.
Real world plumbing.
Shout out to plumbers.
Yeah, give him a cap.
He's good as gold. He's always on to me saying, right, you've got to change this or you've got to change that. And I'm always there to take constructive criticism. And obviously, I want to make a product that everyone likes. And I know if he likes them, then most
knee
of the,
pads. Plumbers, just knee pads for plumbers.
I'll be honest, I feel like trousers, because people are such different. Like, tops.
Yeah.
It's pretty... I'd say it's pretty easy, but trousers.
Yeah.
Like everybody comes in
different
like,
sizes,
different shapes and
like
sizes.
Ladies work wear as well because
ladies wear the men's ones.
That's what of the women say. All of the women prefer the men's ones. So we just run a unisex. I mean, we run 12 variants in one trouser.
So your stock has got to be
So we're
so much stuff.
It's incredible.
You need it, don't you? Like the variants.
I mean, for sure. I mean, there's no point having just one size in leg because then you're just like the rest of the brand. You know, we have a short leg, long leg and a regular leg. And then we run from a small waist, which is, you know, 30, 32, all the way up to an extra large. And we should be increasing that with more trousers to come. We'll be going up to double XL and, you know, see some of the boys walking around the trade shows and you think, oh, the XLs are not even going to fit them.
Well,
so
when you start supplying into America, if ever you get that far, like we think there's some big guys over here and big girls. There's some
bigger ones there.
That's
the thing, isn't it? With clothing is that broad, people's bodies are that here, there and everywhere. Mm.
And I feel like that's why the elasticated waist works so well as well. Yeah. It's just adjustable and obviously people just feel a little bit more comfortable, you know. Mm. I think the old like sort of button sort of style to a trouser is a little bit uncomfortable.
I feel like as well, if you do put a bit of weight on, and when you've got a button, it's digging in you, or it's likely to just, you know, with me anyway.
How does it?
Burst out.
It does. Digs right in. Yeah.
So you're saying it didn't then, Mark?
No, it does. They all dig in. They all dig in when you're built for comfort, not speed.
Thanks, mate. do you actually, because I think JCB do their own.
weren't we? Yes.
I've noticed
yeah,
the
yeah,
belt.
Yeah.
Noticed the belt
yeah.
earlier.
Yeah, one brand.
Repping.
Yeah. And this. This is one as well. This is actually
quite
one of the
quite
only.
Like
yeah.
The old,
it's quite
the old
like
school.
Subtle one, yeah. But this is actually like one of the only like ladies tops that they do. Most of their brand is men's sizes.
So JCB as well, massive brand.
Yeah.
Do they have a lot of female fans as well of the brand, or is it?
Yeah, I suppose so. But then we've also got our own staff that work for us. Like there's a lot of women now that work on the production line, work in the factory, building the machines.
Do they give those t-shirts?
So they tend to have like the polo tops, and at the minute the women on the line that are building machines get provided with men's workwear.
I think they'd be quite cool.
I mean, to be fair, they are. They've come up with like they call it the hybrid stretch, which is elasticated, and that fits a lot better. But it's just a matter of finding your sizes, because you're trying to, you know, it's not as simple as just saying, well, I'm usually a 12 or I'm usually a 14, therefore I want this size. You have to convert it to what a man's size would be, which is something I've never had to do before. But
you probably shouldn't have to do. But
yeah,
that's just.
You do find it to work. And the reality is that for the workwear brands, they need to know that there's actually a demand out there. There's loads of us on social media that are like, yes, we need a women's workwear brand that works for women.
But in
actual fact, that's just within our small community. In terms of the volume and the demand, it's much more challenging for...
Give me a couple of years.
There will be more demand as women are coming into it. And then there'll be the market for it, and then the brands can go out there and produce something that's, because that's the other thing, it's got to be affordable.
Yeah.
There's some great, I mean, I've got a cracking pair of Engelbert trousers that are women's, you know, fit me beautifully and love them, dead comfortable.
Super expensive.
Yeah, they're about four times more expensive than the workwear that my male colleagues get. But I had to like beg to get one pair of those, and they get given three or four pairs of the decent men's JCB ones.
Yeah.
But that was just to get a female pair of fitting trousers that fits me like in the hips and that.
Yeah. What's the sort of future then for you guys? What would you, if I said to you, what's an ideal scenario, like, you know, typical 5-year plan, or what would you like to see from the brand, or what ideas do you have to?
We would definitely like to have women workwear in the near future. Obviously, with our brand name, we're going to call it Komoda. So that's like the female version.
Nice.
So I've already thought about it, you know, there's steps in place for it. We're actually planning to do a flame retardant trouser soon as well. Yeah. So hopefully going into a little bit more corporate clients, and obviously being coming from an electrician background nowadays, with health and safety just going through the roof, and everyone's a little bit more on the ball with that. So that's a very high demand as well. So we're just trying to go where the demand is. Mm. And there's obviously high vis that we've not touched into as well. So we'd like to bring out oranges and yellow trousers as well.
In for the orange.
Love an orange.
Yeah. So there's definitely plans to bring out sort of another few more trousers as they are normal. And then obviously a little bit more specialised with the women, the high vis, and a bit flame retardant as well.
It's finding that little, there'll be one product, won't there, that flies that no one else has done. There's got to be something that will just catch someone and go, they're like the gilets when they started to become a thing on sites and stuff. Now, you know, all the plasterers are covered in them. Well, the plasterers are covered with them on. Everyone's knocking them out.
To be fair, painters trousers as well is something that we want to produce at some point. You know, obviously I'm a small company still at the minute, and we're trying to grow, and as we try and grow, we're trying to make the correct choices. So we're trying to make the trousers that we think has got the most demand, the most potential. And then obviously we'll rule out all of the others.
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult because a lot of people listening or watching won't understand when you've got that many variations of trouser, long, short, certain inside leg, whatever waist, you've probably got like 100 SKUs.
The SKUs is crazy.
Which people don't realise, actually, that just eats into your cash flow.
What's
business.
A SKU?
It's
just
like
for us tradespeople. Yeah.
It's like
you're just sitting there going, oh, yeah, SKU. What is it?
Stock keeping units. So it's basically another way of saying, like, a product code.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely a learning curve. Like, as I sort of first made my order, I've adjusted how many, and you sort of, you learn as you go, do you know what I mean? Like anything, you pick up on what's the most popular sizes, and you just try and sort of create a spreadsheet to sort of make a best order, so you know that you're going to run out of the stock at the same time. As you say, the extra larges doesn't go as much, maybe longer leg, most people are quite short in this country, so right. the short legs seem to fly out first, which was surprising to me. I thought the regular leg might do a little bit better. Mm. So, you know, there's different things that you pick up on and that you learn, and you just got to...
So what are you, 3 years into it now then?
Yeah, so we've just entered our... So I've released the first product on the 12th of November, 2020.
So that would have been when that big flu thing kicked off, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so I started it just before and obviously kicked off sort of during that time when I was really trying to get the product out there.
And I bet you was shitting yourself.
Well, it was a nightmare because obviously it all come from China. No one wanted to do business with China. Yeah, yeah. So finding manufacturers...
Could I have some trousers?
Yeah, finding trousers and manufacturers and stuff was difficult. But, you know, shout out my manufacturers. They've supported me along the way, and we're always trying to reach out to new ones as well. And obviously, just get us the best products that we can for the people.
So was that a time when you thought, am I going to survive through this?
The hard thing at that time, actually, which I'll give him credit for, is trying to get stock. You remember, nobody had stock of anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what tended to happen was when everybody realised, well, actually, you can still sell online or you can do certain bits, everyone went, we need to order. And then costs of containers went bump. Yeah. So it went from, say, £2,000 for a container to £10,000-£12,000 for a container.
And that's got to be passed on down the line, isn't it?
And obviously, if you're a new business as well, which, you know, sometimes if you haven't got a bit of experience, you'd think, oh, yeah, well, my price is great. And then all of a sudden you get a bill and you're like, I haven't factored that into my price.
Especially if you've got a lot of SKUs.
Stock keeping units.
Love it.
Yeah. So it's a whole balancing act of juggling stuff that people don't see actually. Like,
but at that point, you was quite new to it, so you were probably going, shit, am I doing it right?
Yeah, well, to be honest, at that point, I was still living at home. I'm not anymore, but I was lucky enough to still be living at home. And I was a full-time electrician, you know, and I was for the first 2.5 years of the business. So I would be on the tools, just like, you know, working in my trousers, obviously handing leaflets out.
So it was like a bit of a side hustle, and then
it
just
been a side hustle until like recent times, you know. Recent times. I finally took all of the stock. It was in my mum's garage, and then it got
shout
big enough.
Big
up mumsy. it was in my mum's garage. It was in, you know, mum and dad's front room. It was then spread into the loft, and then I finally got a house. So then my whole house become flooded with stock, and then finally moved into a warehouse. And finally got a little warehouse now. Got a little office as well. So
are you there every day at the warehouse?
Yeah, so that's where I work.
So when did you make that decision to like go from working, got your income, you've obviously just got a new house and a new mortgage, and you decide...
When
you
ran out of space.
I'm going to give it all now, I'm going to quit my job, and this is what
when
I'm
he couldn't
do,
have a bath.
I mean, I remember like walking into my house and just like opening like the front
it
door
felt
as
like
a
one
porch,
of those, one
and
of those,
I'd open it and it would just be like
one of those hoarding programs.
I just felt like I was walking
like
into a container.
I can imagine your house like that now. Imagine them push the front door open.
Ladies and gents, just a quick one to say a huge thank you to our new headline sponsor, CT1, the best sealant on the market, voted for by the British public. Not only that, it's made in Britain as well. So go and support a product and a brand that is made in the UK. But I just want to say to you, they've got a brand new product out, which is the BT1. It's a combination sealant and adhesive like the popular CT1, but it's perfect for keeping a hygienic environment. And it's designed to completely stop the growth of bacteria, microbes, and fungus. And not only that, this stuff is strong. Now, it's going to be available at Travis Perkins, Wicks, Juicens, and pretty much everywhere else. So there's no excuse not to go and give it a go. So we're really happy to be partnering with CT1.
Should we move across anyway to our first ever
digger driver?
Digger driver, yeah.
Is that the official term, first digger driver? Is that what you go as?
I don't know. I think some people like to be called operators.
Yeah, I was going to say.
An operator. Because if you're just driving it, then it suggests that you're actually not all that good. You get drivers and then you get operators.
So digger,
I might
digger,
be a driver, I don't know.
Digger, digger operator.
No, digger driver's all right. I have a really weird journey. Like, I didn't grow up in construction. I didn't have a dad who was a tradie. Mm. I actually went through school, did all right. I was like the nerdy kid, right? Mm. I wouldn't have been friends with you like in school, lad. I've not wanted to, but
yeah. She looked at me when she said it. I definitely wouldn't have been friends with you. Not with those two.
What are you trying to say?
You were probably like the cool kids or like the cool naughty kids, I don't know, and I was just the little swat in the corner that asked for an extra test or something.
I think a lot of trades, school wasn't really
99% of people we have an ear are like, did shit at school, didn't get any grades, you know, and then you go into construction, trade base.
And that's what my school was like. It was like everybody was pushed into university. That's what you were going to do. Yeah. That there was like a little group of lads who were a little bit naughty, and they were like sent onto like construction class.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were just the naughty kids, and there was nothing. There were nothing wrong with them. They just weren't celebrated by our school for whatever reason because they weren't getting the grades to promote the school.
Yeah.
So I actually ended up going off to university. I've got a degree in drama.
Oh, so, wow, really?
Yeah, I've got a degree in drama studies.
That's cool.
But yeah, so I went off to university and you know, my parents pushed me into that. They wanted me to go off to university. I don't think they really minded what I did.
What did your parents do?
So my dad actually owns a gun shop. He's
I can't believe we nearly missed that one.
We could go shoot guns.
Yes.
At Diggers.
Brilliant.
Why not? You might upset some people doing that. Yeah, my dad owns a gun and fishing shop. So he's stepped away from the fishing side now.
He just sells
guns and like country clothing and that sort of thing.
Barber jacket.
Yeah. But he's like self-employed. He actually started at, we're from Derby, so he started at Rolls-Royce.
So
he
that's where the JCB, because JCB's Derby, is it?
Yes, yeah. So it was weird. My dad had gone to Royce's when he was a kid.
Yeah.
He worked at Royce's for years and years. Eventually
I love
went
the way you call it Royce's.
Well, yeah,
like it's one of the family.
Thing. In Derby, it's like you either go work for Royce's or you know, you've got Toyota there. Yeah.
Right,
and my brother, who's a couple of years older than me, was told you're going to go to Royce's like dad and get your apprenticeship. You know, and that's what he was pushed into. And I wasn't. I was pushed off to university and he was pushed into...
Did he go that way?
Yeah, he went off to do Royce's. And in actual fact, he went to Rolls-Royce, he did his apprenticeship, he went on to do a degree with them as well. All paid for. So we've both now got a degree qualification, but I've got 30 grand of debt for it.
Tap the brother up.
Thank you, Dad.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Where's them bloody
guns? It was really strange, yeah. And I come from like quite a traditional household as well. My dad went out and was working and grafting, and my mum was sort of the housekeeper.
Right.
She had loads of different jobs. She was always working. She was always busy. But my dad was sort of the breadwinner as such. Mm. And I think that affected me a little bit. That sort of made me think, right, you know, I didn't want that. Yeah, 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 I didn't want like the idea of relying on a man to
you didn't
get
want
me money.
Go down the stereotypical.
Yeah, I don't think that hit me till a little bit later in life, but I actually wanted to be a teacher. I was quite inspired by my own drama teacher.
I think anybody, regardless of a man or a woman, should be independent to have their own life.
Yeah.
And then obviously, when you meet somebody, you're never relying on anybody, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it should be. And I suppose, like traditionally, stereotypically, that's not been the case because the woman would raise the children. But things are changing now, aren't they? And I think. Women are able to have that independence. It's more socially accepted now, which is a great thing.
Yeah,
It was a different time that our parents lived in. So, but definitely influenced me. But I wanted to teach. So I went off to university. Then when I finished,
did you not want to go follow the drama thing?
Yeah, so a little bit. I did do a little bit of it still. I used to do things like I used to act in murder mysteries, and I used to do like
the week when you go away.
Yeah, so a weekend away. They're such good fun. So I'd be acting in it. Yeah.
So in that you sit
around. It was Dr. Fitzgerald in the geography class with the globe.
So with that, you go to like, is it like
a hotel,
you have a meal, don't you? And then the whole thing plays out around.
And then there's like a script, but that'd it's not cool. really scripted, it's all improv mostly. So I know that I'm going to be playing, you know, Miss Charlotte
Lady Godiva.
Yeah, something like that. And she's got a secret backstory, but you know, you've got your character brief, and it's just going to come out gradually over the course of the evening, and people can ask you questions,
that's
and you've
cool.
got to respond.
I've never been to one of these.
Oh, I'd love to do one.
My
mum and dad used to, that was the type of thing they'd go and do.
Yeah,
it
was good. It was good fun. I don't do them as much anymore. I still do a little bit like at Halloween. I'll do like scare acting and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do enjoy doing it. Mm. But it's always been like I wanted to teach is what I wanted to do. But when I left university after 3 years, I went to look to get into teaching to go do like a PGCE, the sort of the follow up year you've got to do.
Not easy.
It was just a terrible time to get into teaching, like drama teachers in particular.
So,
like,
so what year is this?
This would have been 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like being a drama teacher was not really a thing. So there were so few spaces to go train to be a drama teacher. Yeah. It was like, you're going to be an English teacher or you're going to be a PE teacher and you're going to teach drama on the side. It's not really what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Right.
So funny enough, I just decided to go get a job, and that happened to be at Rolls-Royce. that was on the doorstep.
Just a bit late.
Yeah. Back at Royce.
So yeah, that's where I ended up with Royce.
Doing what there?
I went into events. Because I was always that friend that kind of organised things. Yeah. I was the planner and the coordinator.
Which I suppose the drama thing had a bit of a...
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
And I guess... You've got to be quite outgoing, haven't you?
I think that degree got my foot in the door at Rolls-Royce. You know, it was a mark on a CV that probably got me an interview. But then I guess my confidence in the interview, able to, you know, bullshit my way into it and say, oh, yeah, I'm top events planner.
I've done it loads, yeah.
And, then I did events planning for the next sort of 7-8 years.
For Rolls-Royce.
Just for Rolls-Royce. So that's sort of where I eventually ended up at JCB in events. So I did events for Rolls-Royce. I worked for a couple of pharmaceutical companies. So I did events for, like, an agency that worked with, like, AstraZeneca and Astellas, some of these names that we recognise because of... what we've been through. So I used to organise events for them, and I travelled a lot. It was amazing. I had a job for a while. It's the best job ever. It paid really rubbish, but it was amazing. I was a venue finder. So basically I found hotels and venues and locations for people to host their big conferences.
So real quirky, cool looking.
Yeah. So they'd say, we want to have a conference somewhere in Europe for 300 people, and we need to have like 5 breakout rooms, and we want to have a big gala dinner on the third night, but we all need to stay in the same hotel. So it's got to be a big hotel with more than 300 bedrooms.
So that's, you've got to go and find that.
I'd go find it. Brilliant. Yeah. So I'd go over to Barcelona and just like sample all the hotels and I'd go over. I mean, I went to Dubai,
real
like
Judith Chalmers.
I went over to Dubai like 3 times in a year.
Did you have to go I'm not sure hotels. I need to pop back just to check that hotel.
Absolutely. It got to the point where if I didn't get a chocolate on my pillow, I was like, this hotel's not right.
That
so
was like the backhander was
so
the chocolate
spoiled. Yeah,
the and soap in here is diabolical.
I think it's from that guy that was on Train Legends, the soap guy.
But it was amazing, and I love doing it. But, you know, you're away from home a lot, and the novelty of it soon wears off.
When you're younger, it's fine, I think.
Yeah. And I was travelling a lot, you know, certainly, you know, from the outside, it looked like I was off here, I was off there. But all you see really is conference rooms and hotels. You don't actually get to do your own thing. You're not going with anyone either. You're on your own with a group of strangers.
Right.
So you can't take your partner with you, or you can't take your family with you. So I did enjoy it, had a great time. But that's what led me to go get a job at JCB. I quite like the corporate events world. Got a job at JCB. Before that, I knew nothing about diggers. All I knew was that there was diggers. Yeah. But I've got a specialty area now, which is like one of our sort of leading products, the backhoe loader. And that's like my baby now. So I work on the backhoe product team.
Yeah.
And I work just with that product. So that now that's where my knowledge is like
strongest. So what's that then? What would that be?
That's like the traditional, what you'd call a JCB.
Right, with the arm.
Yeah, it's got a dig end on the back, and it's got a shovel at the front.
Yeah.
And it's like the multi-tool.
If you took a caricature of a JCB, that would be the one that they draw.
That's the one, traditionally that's what everyone calls a JCB.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the backbone of where we all started in JCB. You know, the first machine was built. We've been building them for like 70 years now. And they pretty much built Britain as well.
Yeah.
But what's happened is that more other construction machines like 360s that can spin all the way around, they've come into fashion. And we've been victims of our own success, really, because as other machines have grown, which is great for us, we've introduced new products. The backhoe is sort of like step back a little bit, and it's no longer like as trendy and as cool. But that's why I love working on it, because it's a challenge.
I
still believe that it's a great product. It can still do loads
more history
than the others. It has, but it's also like
don't want it to disappear because it's synonymous with the brand, isn't it?
Yeah,
like the SLR 1750 is synonymous with Unilite.
Synonymous with Newmark.
Yes.
But to be fair, though, at some point they might have, I presume it's a bit like a Golf. They have like rebrands or upgrades.
And that's the thing. It has had mega upgrades over the years. Mm. But it's like people always still celebrate the history of it, which is great. But now it's not seen as... So, like, youngsters coming into the industry now, they don't necessarily want to drive a backhoe. They want to drive 368 excavator, you know, one of these ones that's got like that tilty bucket on it.
Yeah,
dead like sexy stuff. Like they want to drive one of them.
Yeah. That's Digger being sexy.
It's a thing. Yeah, backhoes are sexy. I'll tell you that.
Did you see the look?
She looked at me like, oh,
you're dead to me.
And you're sort of like teaching. You said earlier you're sort of like teaching now. So you finally got to the teaching part of your what you wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah. So as I was working in events, I was staying behind at the end, and I was like learning about the products. I spending time with our product specialists, and we launched a big excavator back in, this would have been about 2018, we launched this a big X series excavator, and as part of the event we had new customers coming in every day, show them how to drive it. We've got our own quarry at JCB, so we're doing the demonstrator team there, showing people how to do it, and at the end of every day I was like, I want to go, like, let me have a go. So I remember like driving at them saying, I stay behind at the end and getting in this digger. And just, it was like a 13-ton excavator, and just took this scoop out of the ground like it was butter. And it just felt ace. I just felt amazing, sat in this massive chunk of metal. I just felt like so
being
powerful.
Completely in control of something that can do that to the ground.
I was like, it's a bit of me, this.
Yeah.
So, from that point on, I was like, I'm going to drive diggers. So, kept doing that, and eventually
So you said to him, right, I no longer want to do your events. I want to drive the diggers.
Yeah.
That was
I kind of just put the word out there. Well, I kind of joked about it quite a lot. Like, you let me know.
And then when somebody goes, go on then.
Well, that's kind of how it happened. Like, I remember making a jokey comment after I'd had a go at digging this one hole, and it was just shocking. I dug a trench and it was awful. But I dug this trench and I got out. I was like, you let me know if you ever want a female member of the demonstration team. I'll be waiting.
Yeah.
And then literally 3 or 4 months later, I got this call. Do you remember you said that thing? And I was like, yeah. They said, are we serious? I was like, no, but yeah. And they took me on. They taught me how to drive machines, which initially for me was really, I was like, I don't want to let the team going to think I'm a burden. I look back at it now and I had the right attitude and I didn't have any bad habits. All I could do was come in and just listen.
Yeah, because you're going in completely fresh. Mm. So you're not picking up the years of on-site work.
Yeah.
They're showing you exactly how they want it done.
Yeah, there's no ego or attitude. I wanted to be taught. And I think they sometimes struggle to find that. There's often people that come in and think they know it all or think they're the best.
Probably most guys.
But I was actually only in that job as a demonstrator for about 4 or 5 months, if that, because that's when COVID, so it was 2020 when I got that job, or just the back end of 2019.
Did you have to stay?
Yeah, so I got made redundant from that job. So I just got this dream job. I was like sort of 4 months in, they just taught me, I just got my first license to be able to drive an excavator, been out, done my test. I was on them every day. Learning how to do it, and then I got made redundant and I was offered a sort of small payment to leave the company, but I was adamant I didn't want to leave and I wanted to keep my foot in the door. So there was a massive restructure of the business. They reacted very quickly, very fast at JCB, and it did mean that they recovered, but it did also mean that some tough decisions had to be made. And
a business that size, it's
But there was a restructure on it. There was a few positions that came up, and anybody who had been offered redundancy was allowed to apply for one of these few restructured positions. And there was these functional administrator roles that were PAs working for different departments of the business. So I applied for every single one. I applied for them all. And
just wanted to stay there.
I just wanted to keep my foot in the door. I just thought, if I can just ride my way through this, I can get back onto the machines.
Yeah. Stuff like that, though, again, this is when people listening to this, obviously, if you really want to work somewhere or you want to do something, you have to just be like, I'll do anything.
And I did. I spent sort of 4 months as a PA for our purchasing department.
But I suppose you knew if anything comes up then,
I was straight. And I was really open with the guys I was working for at the time. I was like, look, this is really a stepping stone.
I won't be here long. I'll be back in the digger.
Toodaloo.
But unfortunately, they were good at that. I think that's what's nice about working for JCB is that, they support
If you're moving within the business, I don't think people can.
Yeah, they're happy to retain those people, hopefully. So I did that for 3 or 4 months. And I must admit, that was a great experience, working for a purchasing department when we were having issues getting hold of stuff. It was a really challenging time. And then fortunately, I managed to get back onto the machines working for the research team. And that's when I became a test driver.
Brilliant.
And it was better, really, because the demonstration team, you spend more time sort of cleaning the machines off, making them look nice and shiny and clean, and you're doing dancing diggers, traveling and showing other people how to drive them. But I wasn't necessarily going to get the hours on the machines to perfect my technique as a pan operator.
So you're basically like the digger version of the Red Arrows.
Yes, that is it. That's exactly what we are. Yeah.
So, ladies and gents, I want to say a big, big thank you to one of our show sponsors, which is Tradeify. Now, most of you will probably already have heard of Tradeify, and it's an app that will help you streamline your business. It will save you time, invoicing, quotes, all that sort of thing. It's all in there. So if you want to spend more time on the tools and less time doing the paperwork, which, frankly, nobody likes doing paperwork, Tradeify is the app for you. Now, if you click this link above, you're going to get yourself a 14-day free trial. And because we are confident, just as much as Tradeify are, you don't even need to enter any payment details to get that free trial. But if you enter code TRADELEGENDS, you'll get a massive 50% off for the first 3 months when you subscribe. So stop wasting your time and get back on the tools and save yourself a bit of time in the process and some money.
Is there any other women that do the show, the
there is
that.
Now, yeah. Oh, so is. After I got made redundant, unfortunately, they did then bring another woman into the team when they recruited like, again. So no, I was really buzzing. Actually, when the jobs came back up again, you know, it was an option that I could have reapplied for that job and gone back to that team. But at the time, I was actually really happy working on the test side, doing endurance testing. When I got to that job, that was like opened up this new world for me, where I was like an hourly. Because before that, I was like salaried.
Yeah,
I'd always been salaried and just. This was another thing that I just wanted to tell the world about. Like, construction is a career where you can work hard and get rewarded for it. Mm. And you can earn good money. If you're good at what you do, yes. And you're committed and dedicated, you can earn good money.
I was just thinking about that sound bite tackle, innit?
Well, and you know, when I was working in events, I was working long events is like that. You work long hours.
But
teaching's probably the same.
People are, the only flip side to that is people think they can earn it now.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Oh, you like, have to. Yeah, you have to put the work in. The work in.
But like you talking about moving to come back to then come back. You going into being a spark to then, you know, starting your own business and actually like, you know, having everything in your house because you can't afford to have a unit or whatever.
Yeah, of course.
I think people always think it's.
Yeah. You've got to put the work in, haven't you? I was pretty much for most of my 20s, I was like hopping between jobs, getting paid like 16, 17 grand a year, thinking, how on earth am I ever going to be able to afford a house? And
with the student debt.
And with the debt I had, and I'd got the degree, but, you know, and I'd get a promotion, I'd be on 19 grand. I was like, oh, yeah, this is all right, you know, I've got a bit more money. And then all of a sudden, I'm going into construction, and, you know, you're getting hourly paid, and there's overtime as well. So you can, like, come in and do a weekend shift. You can do a Sunday, you get double money. Mm. And it's like all of a sudden this money's coming in. And I was like, why have you kept this a secret from us?
One thing I was going to ask you is, because JCB's quite big in that community, in that area, do they actually go into schools and actively try to encourage school leavers or A-level leavers to come into the business?
I mean, JCB have got their own academy. So literally just across the road from us, they've got a school where they're bringing people in. So a lot of the people out of the academy are coming into JCB, but they're also feeding into, I mean, like I say, you've got Jaguar Land Rover, Rolls Royce, Toyota, all on a doorstep.
Yeah.
And they do a lot with careers fairs, but they are plucking staff out as well, plucking people out of universities as well. So we've got a massive like graduate program, but we have a huge amount of apprentices, and the apprentices that come through JCB
are good.
And they really get used. You know, it's not just like you're babysitting them. Like they get so much experience. They get placements around the business. They get some amazing opportunities. So it really is great for them. There's probably
spokesperson
not enough
as well,
done.
Yeah. Lord Bamford, if you're watching this.
But does JCB obviously know about your social media side,
they
which
do.
Is their product.
Yeah, which they were a bit unsure about it. Still now, they don't quite know.
Was you pulled in for
it,
a conversation about it then?
I don't think anyone really knows.
I think what it is, especially when it's a big brand like that, is obviously they're a bit controlling.
Yes.
But also they're worried that if ever you did anything wrong in your personal life, how it affects the brand.
They haven't got control over that.
Have you got a personal Instagram? And the JCB girl one.
Yes.
So two.
They are separate. Yeah.
And they know about, obviously they know about the JCB. Are they happy for you to put content on there through them?
I honestly think if you've got people that love the brand, they love to work where they like. They're the biggest advocates for you, and they know the product.
I think they know that, but like on paper, it's like they're a bit. It goes against what they would normally allow because they haven't got the control. But actually, it works well. I enjoy doing it.
They could write something into a contract with you that obviously, if you were to ever leave, maybe then unfortunately.
But the main thing is, you know, I make these little stop motion videos of like diggers, like doing stuff. It takes me far too long, but I have far too much time on my hands. I'm just a massive digger nerd. I love doing it. But I think once someone told me that the chairman had seen one of my digger videos of like some of these little five toy diggers flipping a pancake, and he loved it. So then that's it now. I've got the seal of approval.
It's like the Wallace and Gromit animation.
But has there ever been a, obviously I don't want to pry too much, has there ever been a conversation with them to support you doing that through that channel?
There's been conversations, but like I don't think it's like a support thing.
Because I'm surprised if they had, I'd have been brilliant.
They probably don't realise the power of social media.
Yeah, we're still quite an old-fashioned business, there's quite a lot of traditional.
And the reason being is when you've got continued growth at the rate that they have, you don't even look at other things because you're on that rocket ship and you think,
We're a global business as well. Yeah. So, you know, I look at what I'm doing, you know, and it's just...
And is there any other accounts similar to yours
that work for JT?
Or just in general? Is there a guy out there doing similar JCB content?
Not necessarily just on JCBs, no, there's nobody else that
But there
would
is
be.
Digger content.
There's plenty of digger content out there that work with other brands.
So I think they're massively missing a trick if they don't sort of... get involved with yours because it's great content.
But I just enjoy doing it, and
but also as well for a brand like JCB, if you had some ambassadors or influencers like that were big, and they're using your product, over a Caterpillar or I don't know another brand of digger, then it's everybody's thinking, well, if I'm going to have one, I want to drive one of these, or I want to be part of that brand. So should we go to Jerry Springer?
Yes.
Final thought.
Yeah.
So basically, this point, you can either shamelessly plug yourself, JCB Digger. What's your Komodo workwear one?
Komodo workwear. Designed by a tradesman for tradesmen.
Wow, I love it. Love a logo.
Look down that camera, Liam.
Designed by a tradesman for tradesmen.
Look at that.
Bosh.
We touched on it earlier. It's if you want to do something, just go out and do it, you know? Here's my little soundbite is you'll... always regret the things I'm... Should I say it's
coming? Yeah, go down the cannon.
No, that's cheesy now. No, yeah. I was going to say, someone said to me once...
the slow zoom.
Let me move the water just so it works even better.
You'll never regret the things in life that you do. You'll only regret the things that you don't do. So just go out and do stuff and give it a go. If you want to do it, go for it. But I think one of the biggest challenges that I've had is doubting that I'm actually any good at it. And I think everyone has this, like, imposter syndrome. We've not really talked about it very much, but... one of the biggest things I've struggled with is feeling like I don't belong in this industry because I wasn't born into it, because I didn't grow up around it, because I only came to it in my late 20s, feeling like I don't belong here.
I think, though, if you are passionate about anything, it means you want to learn. Yeah. So you can end up doing anything. Yeah. You might not be the best at it to begin with, but the more you keep going at it...
My big message to anybody really, but particularly to women, is that like you are welcome here, and it's an amazing community of people, and you are safe here, you are welcome here, and you'll do well by it. So
it's not as daunting as what you
think. No, it's not. It's really not. And there's all challenges, but everyone has challenges. If you want to do it, then come along, and you are welcome here, and you are like, you know what I mean. You will be good enough. Everyone starts somewhere. You've all got to learn. So just go for it.
So my advice to people is to write a list of all of their goals. Pick the top priority or the goal that they would like to achieve first, and then write a plan to stick to that goal, and then remember daily that that's what you want most. There's going to be times where you're not feeling motivated. There's going to be times where you don't want to do stuff that you need to do to achieve that goal. So it might be college work, it might be revising, it might be going to the gym, whatever your goals are, just remember that that's what you want most, and don't ever quit on your dreams. And obviously, if you don't stop, you will eventually, I promise you, get your goals.
Bloody hell, these two are good.
Good sound by heaven.
Good.
Gonna clip the shit out of this, Jack.
They are good.
I'm feeling so
motivation.
Let's
go and do something.
Time to dig.
I'm gonna write a list.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah.
Love it, mate. Love it. So. Thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Hopefully.
I can't believe we made it through the whole podcast without getting the old RAC on the blast.
I was waiting for you to go, RAC, you're live on Trade Legends podcast. How can I help you?
Yeah, mate, but waiting here for half an hour.
Where are you? Been longer than that, yeah. They probably think I'm still out in the cold. I'll tell them, like,
really over-egg it. So, yeah, thanks
for having us on.
Yeah, thanks.
It's been a good one.
Really enjoyed it.